paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe Rex wrote in for Derek Mason, Braden Gall, Marquise Munson. The text line is open. 615-737-1025.
We are going to abuse the text line.
Yeah, somebody responds, way to get people texting and driving, guys.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Yeah, we're not encouraging you to do that, but hit our line anyway.
You can do voice to text and drive, though.
There you go. Question on the text line, do you think Mike Vrabel would consider letting Tannehill walk just so he could get to Tom Brady? Save it. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. But again, the text line is open. That is an example of how you can use the text line, get involved in the show, and hopefully that means it just creates, like, you know, just a ton of awesome and hilarity. Hilarity will ensue, and there'll be great conversations to be had. How about that?
And a few comments about Stillman.
This is lots of comments about Stillman in there. I can't read all of them. But listen, this is how we communicate. It's 2019. All we do is text each other anyway. So don't call us. We'll call you. Joe, SEC championship game coming up. Why do I like Georgia to play well in this game? Tell me my thoughts.
Well, I feel like they've come on, and I think that defense has a chance to keep this a game. I think ultimately though, they're going to have to keep pace to a certain extent in this game. I think their defense can hold LSU down better than most, but LSU's going to get on the scoreboard. So Georgia's going to have to, you know, keep pace. I mean, what's the deal? DeAndre Swift to me is, what's the latest on him? Because to me, if he's not DeAndre Swift, boy, it's hard for me to envision Georgia pulling this off.
Now they've got Harian, who's the senior, and they've got the white kid who is a 5-star elite superstar that I believe towards ACL and didn't play last year, but has played pretty good. It's not like they don't have good players, but Swift is a stud. Now, he's dealt with the contusions in his shoulder for a large part of the season, so I don't think anything's going to change. I think he'll be on the field. The question is, how much of DeAndre Swift are you getting? I actually don't think it hinges on him. We talked about Jake Fromm yesterday, and I'm glad that you're in today because Derek is very much LSU. In fact, he gave me 14.5 points yesterday for a bottle of bourbon, and I said, I'll take that. So I have Georgia plus 14.5 against Derek. He's big LSU. He's been big LSU from the beginning of the year. I don't expect him to change on that. For whatever reason, Georgia has not allowed more than 20 points at any point during the year. So it's going to be about Joe Burrow reading the Georgia defense and the pressure and getting his team into the right play, which we all believe he can do. Jake Fromm is 36-1 when throwing 30 or fewer passes. He is 0-5 when he's thrown more than 30 passes in his career. Starts 42 games. It's about, does the Georgia defense keep this game in the 20s, like Auburn did against LSU, 23-20, and does Jake Fromm have to throw the ball more than 30 times? If those two things, if Georgia can win those two statistical battles, I think they can be in the game in the fourth quarter and get a win because they don't have a problem going down the field and scoring when they have to get a drive. It's when they have to get four drives that they struggle.
Can I make the case that comes back to DeAndre Swift again?
Sure.
Yes, you have to have that balance. And in LSU, you know, the thing with LSU, like, and I've been thinking about, obviously, the dream matchup I think we'd all love to see would be LSU-Ohio State. I mean, anybody, Clemson, either of them against Clemson, too.
I think LSU-Ohio State would happen if Ohio State beats Wisconsin and Georgia beats LSU.
Yeah, I think then that's your 1-4.
I think it has to be your 1-4.
That's your 1-4. But I just haven't trusted, you know, LSU's defense all year. Now it hasn't mattered, you know. Right. But if they take on like an Ohio State, man, I mean, having watched a lot of Ohio State this year, I think it's a track meet. I think it's why we all want to watch it. I guess for this game, this is why I would buy into LSU or buy into Georgia keeping this close, because I don't trust LSU's defense. You know, I mean, I think Georgia should be able to move the ball in this game, but maybe, you know, I don't know. Have they made progress? I mean, obviously it's not like Texas A&M is is dog meat. I mean, they played well against them.
Yeah, I mean, A&M, yeah, I heard, ironically, I heard Stillman talking about this yesterday. A&M, probably the best 7-5 team ever put together. Their five losses, like, their worst one is to Alabama. Like, that's their worst loss. Auburn's the same. Like, their losses are to, what, LSU, Florida on the road, LSU on the road, and have beaten Alabama and lost to Georgia at
Georgia home.
So,
yeah.
Like, you know, pretty good losses. The defensive question for LSU is fascinating to me because I think we live in this world, and you know this in the media, Joe, where everything has just got to be one extreme or the other. There can't just be, like, and I don't know what to call it, like maybe like the suckification of sports commentary. Like everything just sucks. Oh, Auburn sucks because they were 9-3 this year.
We always have to come back to Stillman.
I wasn't even doing that. I get that a lot from people outside. I work a lot with a lot of people from around the country covering college football and fans and interact with a lot of fans. And people will say they're just so quick. If it's not one of the top three or four or five teams in America, people are so quick to just be like, oh, that guy sucks. That quarterback sucks. That team sucks. Their schedule sucks. Oh, they beat Louisville. Louisville sucks. I'm like, well, Louisville's got the coach of the year in the ACC. They're the most improved team in America. So when Clemson went on the road and beat Louisville, also Stillman, by 35 points, that's a good win. You don't just get to say, oh, it sucks. Like, you're either the champion or you suck.
Right.
There's no middle ground anymore, and I think there's so much more middle ground. Back to LSU's defense.
A lot of talent.
LSU's defense doesn't suck. It's still one of the better defenses in America. It's just not as good as Clemson's or Ohio State's or Georgia's.
Yeah.
So let's not go crazy and think that they're just like giving up 600 yards a game here.
Yeah, I'm biased by having watched the entire LSU Florida game. I watched that game and I'm like they're not going to stop anybody good this year. Like they can't look at this, you know. But yeah, look, they have plenty of talent. And hey, I'll take this LSU over the LSU that we've been forced to watch over the last decade.
Elite defense
by miles.
Elite defense, no offense. Now you've got the elite offense and like an okay defense.
Yeah.
In the modern world of college football, and I think it happened last summer when you know Clemson made the switch from Kelly Bryant to Trevor Lawrence, Notre Dame made the switch from Brandon Winbush to Ian Book, Ohio State went from JT Barrett to Dwayne Haskins, Jalen Hurts to Tua Tagovailoa at Alabama. It went from dual threat super quarterback to pocket passing arm talent guy that could just sling it all over the field and attack, as they say, every blade of grass on the field. And that move to the guy who can now sling it is just, it's the new norm. Joe Burrow last year was good, but this year it's off the charts, I guess, because of Joe Brady.
Yeah, right. I mean, Joe Brady is, but that's another thing with LSU. And he's so young, but do you think they hold on to him?
I would make it, if you want to, and I don't, listen, he's clearly the actual coordinator. Steve Ensminger's not the, I mean, he's, I don't know how much Steve Ensminger's actually drawing up plays because Joe Brady's doing all the work, it feels like. I don't know, like, if you want to keep him around, you're going to have to elevate him. Now, he's very, very young. I don't think he's going to get, Derek thinks he's going to get some head coaching opportunities.
Because that's still a leap to give him a job like that.
I don't think he's ready for that. He's like, I've never even heard his voice, so I don't even know what he sounds like. He's done like one interview his entire career, player and coach, in like 30 years. So I think coordinator, though, is a very nice progression. And if you're LSU, I would get rid of Steve Ensminger or switch their roles and give Joe Brady the promotion that makes him happy and keeps him in town.
Yeah, because there's no question he's had a monumental impact. This has got to be, too, while we're on LSU, been wrong about many, many things. I'm trying to think of something I've been as wrong about, and I know I'm not alone, as Coach O. You know, you think about what I thought, what you, I assume, thought, what a lot, I think most of the college football world thought when they couldn't get Tom Herman and they had to settle for O. You know, I mean, it was just, I mean, going to last year, I'm like, there's no way he makes it through the 2018 season, right? And look at this now. I mean, I can't think of any things this dramatically different from what I thought would turn out.
I think the Coach O evolution has been fascinating. And I will say, like, I'll put my hand up and be accountable. I never thought he was going to get fired last year because the AD move had to happen first. Joe Oliva was not a popular AD. he needed to be fired first, or at least resign, or whatever took. I can't even remember which one it was. But they needed a new power broker, power structure before they were going to move on Coach O. So I will say that I didn't think that was going to happen last year. I think I said that on the show many times. But when he was hired, it felt like a backup plan. It didn't.
Oh, yeah.
Why is this guy going to work? He was terrible at Ole Miss. Well, Ole Miss is tougher. He was okay at USC, but passed over twice for a reason. Why is he going to be good? And what I came into this season, this summer, saying there is more Dabo Swinney in Coach O than anyone realizes. And he has built a culture because he's all about buy-in. And nobody is going to buy in more and embody LSU more than Coach O. And so what he's done is he's got all the high school coaches now pulling in the same direction as LSU. All the administrators, all the players are buying in. It's all about culture and people and buy-in, and they're all tugging on the same rope in the same direction, and that's what Dabo did. Nobody thought he deserved the job. He was an interim wide receivers coach that wasn't going to – he's not a great X's and O's guy. Literally the same resume as Coach O, and now they're 12-0. Now, what happens next year without Joe Burrow? Let's say Joe Brady goes back to the NFL. What happens then? But let's cross that bridge when we get there, I guess.
How do you not pull for Coach O, right? I mean, how do you not like him? You have to like him. I mean, to me, speaking of Dabo, man, he is getting annoying. And I know.
Dadgummitus. It's the dadgummitus thing I've ever seen.
Like, Coach O is way more likable than Dabo Swinney. Can we agree on this?
All right, hang on. Let's take a break here because Coach O is extremely likable. But I have no issues with Dabo overall. I want you to explain why you don't like Dabo Swinney. Defending national champion. Yeah, I might have put some words in your mouth.
Yeah, a little bit. That's okay.
We'll do that when we come back right here on Morning Drive. NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show. Start your morning off with The Kickoff from 11 to 1 p.m., followed by the NFL pregame show featuring Jarrett Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders live from George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. prior to the Titans taking on the Oakland Raiders. NFL pregame show, of course, is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. Text line is open, and man, it's rolling. 615-737-1025. If you want to get in, we will. If you want to add your name, by the way, to those texts, because it's like I'm not going to sit here and read your phone number on the air. Like, oh, 931 says such and such. So if you want to add your name, that'd be cool too. Dabo Swinney and the Clemson Tigers are going to play Virginia. We'll wrap up a conference championship conversation here as Oklahoma and Baylor match up. You can hear that game right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, starting, I believe, at 10 pregame, kickoff at 11. There's just a lot with college football this weekend, but you are getting fed up with Dabo Swinney? You're getting annoyed with Dabo Swinney? What are you with Dabo Swinney?
Yeah, like, I don't dislike Dabo Swinney, but I tweeted this is after his rant this week, you know, about the media and all that stuff. And
we played it on the show yesterday, I believe.
Yeah, so I just tweeted, is he the least likable coach in sports? Now, the problem is when you do two likables together like that, I got a lot of people tweeting like, what about Saban? I'm like, Saban's not likable. We're talking about likable coaches. People throwing like Brian Kelly at me.
Nobody likes Brian Kelly.
Brian Kelly's not likable.
I would say Saban is far more likable than Brian Kelly.
Yeah, but Saban, you can't put him in the quote-unquote likable category, right? We can't put him in that category. Right. So, you know, someone threw Harbaugh at me like, not likable.
Polarizing.
Yeah, yeah. But
Dino Babers is likable at Syracuse.
Oh, yeah.
Very likable.
Sure. But there's no
Mike Leach was likable until he got all freaking grumpy this year.
Well, Mike Leach he's really interesting because I don't want to miss a presser, and I still think he's highly entertaining, but also, are you kidding me?
Dude, he's losing his mind right now. But I worked with the guy, and I love the guy, but like you can't – again, I used those words with you yesterday. I called you a sanctimonious troll in your meager little life. Like, you can't say that stuff to – that's making it personal.
Go crawl back in your hole.
I think the Dabo – listen, Dabo, my take on Dabo is I think you – he's the most annoying likable coach right now.
That's good.
I would say because – at this time of year, all these coaches are starting to lose their mind trying to campaign to get their teams into the playoff. If Baylor wins, I guarantee you Matt Rhule is going to be out there in front of every camera he can and every microphone trying to campaign to get his Baylor Bears into the college football playoff, especially if Georgia loses, obviously. The cleanest way to handle all this is if Georgia just wins, and then we got our four-team playoff. Like Lincoln Riley – So I do ESPN Radio on Saturday nights, and Lincoln Riley called into the show while he was having dinner with his family at like 11 o'clock at night after beating Oklahoma State. And we asked him, we said, Coach, make the case for Oklahoma to be into the playoff. Can, you know, give us your reason. And he's like, well, I don't want to do all that. I'm going to leave it up to the committee. I'm like, dude.
Do it.
You're doing an interview away from your family while they're having dinner. You are actually, you're literally in the campaign, like you're campaigning by being on this interview. Tell us why you belong in the playoff. He's like, I don't want to do that. And I'm going, dude, like your family's over there having dinner right now without you because you're campaigning right now. Yeah. Every coach is doing it.
And campaigning's fine, but when you're talking media conspiracy crap like Dabo, come on, man. The ACC is what it is.
Yeah, and the idea that no one, quote, no one wants us in there, Clemson.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Well, right now you're third, so you're in there. So yeah. The committee has no problem with that.
I mean, his big thing was the Georgia loss to South Carolina, right? And how it didn't, you know, cost them as much. But look, I mean, it's not his fault. It's not Clemson's fault that this is what they're playing week after week. But it's a bunch of like 7-5 caliber teams in that league.
Which is basically what Utah played all year.
That's true, too.
Except for they lost their North Carolina game. And so again, I think if Clemson loses, they should still be a heavy favorite to get in. Now, I don't think
that would be really interesting, though.
I don't think it's going to happen, but I think if Clemson loses, I think Ohio State, LSU, and Clemson should automatically be in already. If Georgia wins, then they get in. If they lose, then it becomes a debate between Utah, Oklahoma, you know, that those two teams. I don't think Baylor's going to win the game, so let's just assume the favorites win and Utah wins tonight, Oklahoma wins. I wonder what the committee does between Utah and Oklahoma because Oklahoma has far better wins. It will have four top 25 wins. Utah has none right now. The best team they played, you know, was USC, and they lost that game. They did not have their star running back. I get that. But, you know, if it's true resume, Oklahoma's got the better resume than Utah. I think Oklahoma would give us a better game in the playoff. That shouldn't be a criteria. But I think they'll give us a better game. I'm just curious. Like, everyone's ripping on the committee. Oh, the committee doesn't like the Pac-12. They're not watching games. They watch the games on iPads. But I think the committee's actually giving Utah credit.
I do, too.
At number five.
And honestly, to me, you hit it. I mean, to me, I think for the most part, we've seen that if you have more good wins than who you're being compared with, that's going to give you the edge. They're both conference champions. I feel like Oklahoma is the choice, but I feel like we're being told maybe not. And I wonder, this is where I'm going to get in the little conspiracy world a little bit, just the Pac-12's absence from this whole thing. Is there like a little bit of urgency, like throw them a bone one time?
Yeah,
I don't know, but I feel like Oklahoma should be the choice. And I don't agree with Feinbaum on like no one wants to see Utah. Like, I think Utah's really good. I think they're worthy if they win this game, and I think a lot of the country would like some fresh blood in there. But I think you hit it. To me, Oklahoma's wins make the difference.
The argument for Utah is that they have been far more consistent and far more dominant all year. They've beaten a lot of 7-5, 6-6 teams by 30 points, like Clemson has in the ACC. They have just crushed people, whereas Oklahoma is – they win by 3 against Baylor. They win by 1 against Iowa State on a 2-point conversion. They lose to Kansas State. Like, they've had a worse sort of final stretch here.
Yeah.
Although they played pretty well against Oklahoma State on the road, a rival who was ranked. You know, how do they look against Baylor? Like, they were down 25 points against Baylor. They were down 25 against Kansas State in the fourth quarter. Like, they haven't played as well as Utah. So I think that's where the committee's going, all right, Utah's more balanced. They have a better defense. They have just as good of efficiency numbers on offense. They've got a running game that's great, great quarterback. Okay, we like Utah a little bit more. They're a better overall team. I honestly can't remember, like, even in 2014, I was doing a show, I remember, late night, Saturday night, after Ohio State won 59-0 over Wisconsin. And the Baylor-TCU thing had been settled. Baylor was technically the regular season champ because they had beaten TCU head-to-head. And I sat there and I said, at midnight on a Saturday night, I said, they're going to put Ohio State in because Ohio State's the better team. Not because of schedule or because of this or that or whatever. They are the better team. They had like 30 NFL players. Like, they were the better team.
And they trucked two teams and won it.
Yeah, exactly. And won the whole thing. I normally feel very comfortable. I may be wrong all the time. My wife will tell you. But I normally feel pretty comfortable in which team I think is better. Like, I think X team is better than Y. I don't have any clue between Utah and Oklahoma who's the better team.
Yeah, that's a great point. That would be an interesting game. It would be, because Utah has a legit D. I don't trust Oklahoma's defense to do anything.
Like, get rid of every metric, right? Get rid of the wins, the strength of the schedule. Get rid of all of that. And just, like, you got to put your life savings on the line. Who's the better football team, Utah or Oklahoma?
Like, who would win in a game?
Right.
Yeah. I'd probably pick Oklahoma in a high-scoring game, but I wouldn't feel great about it.
Let's throw the wrench in this. Clemson loses and is at 12-1. Who's the better football team, Utah, Oklahoma, or Clemson?
It's Clemson.
It's clearly Clemson.
Yeah.
But can they afford a loss? I don't know.
But, man, if they do lose, I can't wait for that Dabo presser after that game. You got to tell John Glennon that his Wahoos have a chance in this game. John Glennon's Wahoos.
And good friend in Nashville SC play-by-play man John Freeman. So multiple media
who's.
Members with the Wahoos. I love Bryce Perkins. He's a great quarterback. They've got a really good defense. I don't think they have a chance.
Yeah.
Dude, it just blows my mind. Trevor Lawrence has never lost a game. Never lost a game. His entire career. College football. Never lost a game.
And it's been a disappointing year for Trevor. The true sophomore that he is.
That is where Dabo is.
No, I agree.
This is where Dabo is right.
That's where he has some beef.
Of the undefeated teams, Clemson has been the quote-unquote disrespected one of the group. They beat, you know, Louisville by 35 and fall to fifth in the polls. He's not wrong about that. And that's why he's a little ornery and you know, saying all the things he's saying. So,
still a little bit annoying, Dabo, but I still like you, Dabo. He's still a likable coach.
He's so likable.
We should rank the likable and then the unlikable coaches.
Derek Mason is maybe the most likable coach.
He would definitely be on the likable coach list, yes.
Have to win football games, however.
That is a key proponent
to the job.
That is part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Text line is open, 615-737-1025, and we're getting lots of conversations on the text line, so give us a text there, and we'll see if we can, you know, that's going to be your most effective avenue of interacting with the show from here on out.
Give me a quick sample.
Let me see here. Most of it's just ripping on Stillman and I can't say. What's really funny about
it's
this
the Stillman stream,
everybody can see this at our company, so like everybody's reading all this stuff. If y'all want to rip on Stillman, just keep it coming, and then everybody's going to see it.
It just makes him stronger.
It does. It feeds the monster. It really does.
It's like gremlins.
It feeds it. Yeah, it's like pouring water on a gremlin.
Impressive that you know gremlins, Marquise. Good job, buddy.
He just builds up, pay what you owe, and it just gets bigger. Yeah, that's what happens.
There was one in here this morning that was like, Jared Stillman is the Butch Jones of 102.5. Let the big dog eat is the same thing as brick by brick.
Oh, now he does say that a lot.
He does.
You guys are mean.
That was a texter, not me. I didn't say that.
Jared, you're my favorite social media influencer.
You got a 5-star heart, Jared.
That was from Adam in Portland. I think you're taking a shot when you say that, Marquise, for some reason. It doesn't feel like you're genuine.
I'd like to hear a more thorough explanation on the air about that.
What, about being a social media influencer?
Do you not follow him on the gram?
Well, we'll explain.
Instagram? I'll never be on Instagram.
I'll explain later.
Twitter is like a big jump for me.
That's insubordination on your part as a member of the media, not being on the gram.
Sorry,
I can't say anything.
Can't do it.
I'll explain it. I'll explain it later.
I'm not on the gram either, so I can't say anything.
Oh, good.
I run my daughter's account. My two daughters have an Instagram account.
Really?
Yeah, because I don't want to post their pictures on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook.
I do approve of that.
So it's private. It's only people that I approve. It's only friends and family, and it's only pictures of the girls. So it's like, if you want pictures of your grandkids, your nieces, you know, friends, kids, my daughters, it's straight to the veins. Just photos. No commentary. No political nonsense. You know.
Just the photos.
Not free for everybody. I get to control it. It's private. It's one of the best.
That's a great idea.
Gina Leahy is the one who told me about it. Uh-huh. She runs the college football playoff, and she was like, dude, you got to create an Instagram account for them and then manage it. Strangely, though, they have a really weird middle-aged, like, white guy sense of humor. It's very strange. Because I write in their voice, and it's me, and everybody wonders. Everybody wonders about this.
Like, strangely, they rip on Stillman on here. I don't know what it is.
Right. Look at me. I'm eating yogurt. Stillman sucks. That's what their posts are on Instagram. All right. Teron Davenport, when we come back, we'll end this madness. Morning Drive. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe Rex wrote in for Derek Mason, Braden Gall. I'm not sure a show I've ever worked on has ever felt as cool as it does right now, listening to that song and welcoming our guest, Teron Davenport, onto the show. Teron, how are you, sir?
Good morning. That's a fitting, you know, Marquise comes through with the music, yep. Man. That's a fitting fitting song. Got an East Coast rapper talking about going back to Cali. That's what I'm doing. So I'm looking forward to it this weekend.
What do you make of the West Coast thing? The Titans, since coming to the state of Tennessee, are 5-17 in the Pacific time zone. Obviously, it's sort of like a noon game for them. So I don't know why this organization has had such a tough time out there on the West Coast. You've covered NFL for a long time, Teron. What do you make of the trip? And is it overblown? Is it too big of a factor? Is it actually a factor?
Yeah, I think it is overblown as far as going East Coast to West Coast, because essentially, and you hit it on the head, it's basically an afternoon game. So the guys have to treat this like it's a 3 o'clock game. And teams that I covered in the past on the true East Coast, you know, Philly, Baltimore, they've looked at it as if, okay, we're going out there, it's going to be just like a 4:05 game, and that's how we're going to approach it. That's what they've said. So I think that's what this Titans team has to do. And I get it, you know, historically they've had a bad record going over there, but a lot of these guys weren't on those teams, you know, outside of the ones that lost to the 49ers the last time they went out there. So I wouldn't put too much stock in it. Frankly, it's more of a thing when teams are going from West Coast to East Coast. That is overall throughout the NFL what the problem has been. So I think end of the day, you just got to line up and play football and just be ready. That's really the bottom line. It's a hostile environment, and they have some things that could help them be able to go in a hostile environment and take the crowd away.
Teron, what's your concern level right now? You know, the Titans, you know, everyone's injury list is growing right now, but obviously the Titans have some guys, some additions this week. How banged up do you think this team's going to be Sunday?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I want to make sure we get you back from the injury list. You know, I know we were waiting to get you back, so let's make sure that's straight. You know,
I leave cold and sinus, baby.
Yeah. But no, as far as the Titans themselves, I mean, the thing I would be concerned about, A.J. Brown yesterday, you know, we watched him stretch a little bit, then he came off and he went to the side. He had that sleeve put on his calf. He walked off the field with a trainer and didn't come back. So I think that's something, or at least he didn't come back during the open portion. So I think that's something to monitor. Adam Humphries, he hasn't practiced this week, so that's another concern. Adoree Jackson, LaShawn Sims, we'll see what happens with them. I saw LaShawn Sims on the treadmill yesterday, but that should be a concern also. I think fortunately for the Titans, they got Tremaine Brock, who is quietly a pretty solid corner. So that can alleviate some of the issues of not having Jackson and Sims, but the main thing is the receivers. That's something that they're going to need those guys, you know what I mean? Because Ryan Tannehill in that passing game is going to have to continue to complement Derrick Henry and what he's doing.
Teron Davenport joining us here, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And you know, the secondary is the area that I'm concerned, but I'm maybe more concerned about it against New Orleans and Houston. Is this another one of those games where Dean Pease can cover up those injuries? I know they went and got Tremaine Brock, and Ty Hill played a great game, a ton of snaps, but I don't know how much you can ask of those guys. Is this still one of those games where they can still survive with the injuries but really need to focus on being healthier against the Texans?
Yeah, I think they can survive with the injuries. I think they should have absolutely zero focus on the Texans, because this game right here, winning this game will make that next game so important. So I think they have to you know, lock in on what they have in front of them. And for me, in doing that, Darren Waller, you know, he's a key player for them. Essentially, their offense is a running back and a tight end. That's it. You know, that's what they base everything off of. So the tight end is Darren Waller, and he's a guy that, you know, you'll see him like a cut split on the backside of trips. They'll run the post. They'll run the out, the fade, all those things. Sometimes they'll line him up on top of the numbers. He's a guy that draws attention from, I mean, I've seen linebackers, safeties, and corners cover him, and it wasn't successful. So I think the main thing for Dean Pease is to focus on that. And they also have a running back that, I mean, that guy finishes runs. So he's dealing with that shoulder. He hasn't practiced, but he'll still play. So I think focusing on those things, you could offset the issues with the cornerbacks, but you cannot let Terrell Williams kill you, you know, and if given the opportunity, he will get deep on you. So there are a lot of things to focus on.
Yeah, I see the London game last year.
Ah, very good point. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, I was going to ask you about Josh Jacobs, Teron, and like you said, I mean, he's been banged up, but he's been playing through that. I mean, how good is he? I think it's, what, the number three and number four backs in the NFL matching up in this game with Jacobs and Henry.
Yeah, he's really good. And the thing with him is he's good in all aspects of the game. That's what's so impressive with him. He was a pretty good receiver at Alabama. I saw him make some catches over the shoulder, one where he had to turn completely around and catch it over the opposite shoulder that it was supposed to be on, and he hauled it in. So him catching the ball out of the backfield, they like to run that angle route. They like to run screens, just have him slip out of the backfield in different ways. So he's really good from that perspective. But for me, when I watch him, it's just – like, he's an angry football player. You know, he's a guy that, you know, plays with a sense of urgency. He runs the ball behind his pads, and he's someone that you have to wrap up. And even, you know, along the sidelines, sometimes those backs will step out of bounds. He won't do that. You know what I mean? And if he is even getting close to doing that, he's going to try to deliver a blow first. So it's all about rallying to the football. You have to do that with him. You have to wrap up because he'll run right through just basic effort, arm tackles.
Teron Davenport joining us here from ESPN covering all things Titans. And it feels like Vrabel and John Robinson, the evaluation of those two guys is just sort of this fluid ongoing situation, which makes sense. Vrabel, it appears, although we did not talk a lot about him going forward on fourth and one down 10 in the third quarter, which is the exact same situation he had against Jacksonville. And we ripped him on fourth and six for not kicking the field goal. Well, this was different. It was fourth and one, and Derek was rolling, and he ends up scoring the touchdown. But it feels like we don't have those questions anymore about Vrabel. And I think, to me, this was a John Robinson-type win over the Colts. He's the one who made the deal to acquire Ryan Tannehill. He's the guy who's picking all these players, Khalif Raymond and Ty Smith and all these bottom-of-the-roster guys, Austin Johnson making a big play. To me, this was a very big Mike Vrabel-John Robinson win against the Colts. Am I wrong on that?
No, you're not wrong, and I think the other one you have to mention is Dane Cruikshank, right, a fifth-round pick. And Vrabel, actually, he was asked what made them think that he would be such a good special teams player, and he made a good point. When Cruikshank first got to Arizona, he was more of a corner, but then they started putting him at like a nickel linebacker spot. And I talked to Cruikshank about that, and he said he had to change his whole mentality, right, and have a little more of a physical mindset. And that physical mindset, guess what that goes right in hand with? John Robinson and Mike Vrabel and the Tennessee Titans. And it also goes right in hand with the special teams aspect. It's a mindset. He was on talking with TD. We broke that down, that play down, and he talked about having that mindset of a special teamer and embracing it, and that's what he's done. So they did a really good job there. I think fans should vote him into the Pro Bowl. So that's one. And then you had Logan Ryan with the interception at the end. Guess who signed him? You know, and Logan Ryan, I'll be honest with you, overall just complete throughout the stat sheet as well as roles. I don't think there's a corner in the league. I don't think there's a corner in the league. I'll say it again, playing better overall than Logan Ryan. So that's another way that John Robinson had his stamp on that game.
Real quickly here, and I know people don't care about fantasy stats. I know it's not a way to sort of analyze players, but I'm a big nerd, Teron. I don't know if you know this, but we play with six IDPs in our fantasy league. Logan Ryan is the number one defensive back in all of fantasy football. In the entire league, Logan Ryan is the number one player at his position right now in fantasy.
Check the internet. No DB has more sacks and tackles. And only one DB has more interceptions. So it says it all.
Pass deflections as well. He's leading the NFL with 17 passes deflected. So he's active on every series. Harold Landry, what do you make of his development? I feel like he is equally as impactful as Logan Ryan on almost every series at this point.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because there is a post on ESPN.com, the Titans page, about Derrick Henry. It actually went up this morning. And the thing with Derrick Henry is the confidence that he has. And I talked to him a little bit about how he puts together, how he's going to attack an offensive lineman. And with him, the reps are helping, but the confidence is also coming from being able to adjust, like morph into a different pass rusher as the game goes on in reaction to how he's being blocked. So it's all about confidence with him. I talked to Shane Bowen. He said the same thing. And he said that, you know, Landry is really going into games feeling and knowing that he's going to be an impactful player. Dean Pease also harped on the confidence thing, and he looked at it as far as just an overall picture, as far as Landry getting comfortable, dropping back into coverage, making plays in space, in addition to being the edge rusher. So one other stat, only Joey Bosa has more QB pressures on third downs. He has 21. Harold Landry has 18. Example of a third down QB pressure that really had an impact, the interception that Kevin Byard has. So it's definitely a really good thing for Landry. He's blossoming. I asked John Gruden about him, and Gruden said that, you know, they're going to make sure they're aware of where 58 is at all times. And he said that his impact is beyond just sacks, you know, and he talked about him just being able to have that combination of speed and strength, and he's an impactful player. So Harold Landry definitely, the arrow is pointing up. I predicted 10 sacks beforehand. He's eight games with a sack, five consecutive games with one, too. So he's definitely on a roll.
Yep, absolutely. And even making the little plays, too. You know, shed a blocker, run down the line of scrimmage, stop a guy for no gain on first down. Huge plays like that nobody notices. Teron, also, always a pleasure, my friend. Great stuff. Have fun on the trip, and we'll see you soon, bud.
Thanks. I'll talk to you. Absolutely. Good to talk to you, Rex Rowe.
You too, bud. See you out there.
Teron Davenport from ESPN. We always appreciate him jumping on with us each and every Friday as the Titans head out to Oakland and take on the Oakland Raiders. And again, it's one of those games that's not only, and I hate the phrase must win because you're not eliminated from the playoffs, but it is a critical game for the Tennessee Titans in a critical spot where you feel good about their chances to win, which should make everybody very nervous about the game because this is still the Tennessee Titans we are talking about. We just mentioned a lot of really good players. Derrick Henry, Harold Landry, Logan Ryan, Kevin Byard. A lot of really good players. Not a single one of them, maybe the best punter on the planet, not a single one of them is getting any run for the Pro Bowl. Why? And do people care? Joe Rexroad, Braden Gall, we'll do that when we return right here on Morning Drive. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Link studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. New text line is open and available, up and running today. We launched that this morning on the show, 615-737-1025, of course. All kinds of questions pouring in. Really good one about college football. What if Clemson, Ohio State, and LSU all lose? Who's in the playoff then? That's a really tough one to answer, so we can maybe get to that a little bit as well. Somebody else saying, the Jeffrey Simmons is a wasted draft pick in 2019 take is not aging well, to which I would say, told you so, because I feel like I was railing on how they should take Jeffrey Simmons every day on the show for like 3 months.
Well, but the point there is
before the draft.
Right, but the point there is a lot of people thought he just wouldn't play this year, right? I mean, I thought there was a definite chance that it just wouldn't pay off this year.
I thought December 1st would be like optimistic thinking. You know, if he could get in for the final month of the season, I thought that would be good. So anything after that or more than that was house money. He has clearly changed the game. Jarrell Casey's getting double. I mean, those two guys now up front for the Titans are just exceptional. And I would assume next year, after a full offseason and a full year in the system to sort of work and grow and develop physically, lose the baby fat, as Derek Mason likes to say, it'll be interesting to see what that defensive line looks like next year. Could be very salty. I saw a mock draft with Terrell Lewis from Alabama going to the Titans with the first round pick, like 17th or something like that overall. And I'm watching Rashawn Evans develop. I'm watching Harold Landry develop. And I'm going, if you added another first round pick to that defensive front, you'd be set on that side of the ball forever, it feels like.
Well, they need more edge rushing, even though Landry has played well.
No question. This year's draft, like last year's draft, was heavy defensive linemen. This year, the offensive line class is exceptional. So you can get an elite offensive lineman at 12, at 15 this year in the draft. I would still lean towards taking an offensive lineman, considering it's still your largest area of weakness, potentially. I don't think you're going to get an elite quarterback. I just don't. Unless you get Joe Burrow, maybe Tua, I don't see anybody else that's going to change your franchise for 25 years. Pro Bowl voting is out, and I don't have all the numbers specifically in front of me, but basically nobody's getting any credit for the Titans at all. Now, they're a 7-5 team. They changed quarterbacks. They're not a big market. They're not a big fan base. You know, the National Football League writ large media doesn't care too much about the Titans in general. You can maybe speak to this, covering them and also working in other areas. I get all of that. Here's my thing. As a fan, as a kid, I loved the All-Star game. Like when my favorite players would get put in the All-Star game as a kid, I loved that. Mike Piazza, I was a Mets fan growing up. Mike Piazza, yes, All-Star. I thought it was the coolest thing. Pro Bowlers, yeah, all so cool. Antonio Freeman, yeah, Pro Bowl. I used to love that stuff. I don't care. I don't care anymore. So I know the players care because there's some money tied
absolutely
to it and some prestige, but like, do Titans fans really care if their guy's playing the Pro Bowl? Do Titans fans watch the Pro Bowl? I don't know.
Well, the game itself, no. I mean, I haven't watched that game. I honestly don't. I haven't watched more than like three consecutive snaps of that game since like Barry Sanders played in it. Like, it's the worst. But it's important. Anyway, look, we still use it as a reference point, right? Like, oh, you know, that team, they had three Pro Bowlers out, or, you know, wow, that team has six Pro Bowlers in their defense. I mean, and like you said, it's very important to the players in terms of their contracts and all that stuff. You know, my 12-year-old talks about it. So I think it is. It's,
so kids,
it's like the young
kids still really like it.
Dad, do you think Derrick Henry's gonna get in the Pro Bowl? Like, well, he should. You know, yeah, I do. I think that
really?
Kids, yeah,
interesting.
Kids, it's the same thing. I think at that age of sports fan stuff like that is more important. And then I don't know what it, I guess. I think it's probably just the fact that it's a bad game for us. It's just like, but you know, I think the Titans should get more love. In terms of, I mean, Derrick Henry and, like you said, Brett Kern. You know, Logan Ryan is one of those, like, if you really watch the game, I mean, he should. He's had a fantastic year.
But he's never going to be the lockdown cover corner star guy that, like, all the ones that are going to go to the Pro Bowl are going to be.
Yes. So it's unfortunate for him.
Does your 12-year-old still watch the game? Because he obviously cares about it, but he still watches it.
I mean, he I don't think he could be more excited for like the NBA All-Star game than he is. He just
NBA's different though.
No, and I still think it's fun to watch the NBA All-Star game. Actually, I kind of like the hockey game the way it is now.
I love
too.
The hockey game. The NBA All-Star game is actually close. It's almost like regular season basketball in the NBA has turned into All-Star games. Like, it used to be NBA games were like in the 90s, and now they're in the 140s,
right?
Which is like the All-Star game. But the NBA is different. The NBA is extremely popular with young people. The growth, although the ratings are way down for the NBA this year. I don't know if you saw that across basically every platform. But
the Warriors, man.
And maybe that's it. I don't know.
That's part of it.
Kawhi sitting out. I don't know. I mean, LeBron being on later because they're West Coast. I don't know. Who knows what the reasons are? Too many games. But Adam Silver clearly knows what's going on because they're very much going to wholesale changes, right, quote unquote, coming for the NBA schedule makers. I the fact that your son pays attention to it and is that tied into Derrick Henry getting into the Pro Bowl or not, I find that interesting. And I'd be curious if other parents who are listening or young people are like, do they have kids that are still very much into it? Because I was very into it when I was 12.
Yeah.
But like you said, as soon as I got to, like, you know, college, there were way more important things in my life than the Pro Bowl. So it's important to the players. I'm curious if diehard Titans fans, like, are you actually disappointed if somebody doesn't get in the Pro Bowl? Are you really actually happy about it? Will it cause you to watch the game if Derrick Henry's in the Pro Bowl?
See, that's where you cut it off. Like, because, I mean, Titans Twitter will be ticked off, you know, for whoever gets snubbed, right? I mean, if you're going to go by, and I know you're big with
Twitter's
me
not
on,
real life.
Twitter's not
Twitter,
life.
Twitter's not
I agree.
Real life.
But, you know, these are fans who are engaged. These are the fans who probably would vote for this stuff.
Right.
So, I mean, there's, you know, you'll see that. But, yeah, then it's, you know, whenever you go to the, will you watch the game? Like, no, that's a hard pass. I mean, I'll watch, you know, like,
then
Office reruns.
So why does it matter so much then?
Yeah, because
especially
it's
when it's
a prestige,
like,
thing.
Three guys pass on the invitation, and then like the next three guys get the invitation, and it's been watered down. The game's not good.
I'm telling you, this
is just a prestige thing.
You guys mentioned it happens every NBA season. Damian Lillard got robbed. How dare them? They're disrespecting Damian Lillard. He's one of the best point guards in the West, and he's not in it. It's a popularity contest. They're not looking. It's a conversation every single All-Star game. I kid you not.
But I feel like that one's still popular, though. People still care about the NBA All-Star game.
Yeah, but that's still separate from watching the game too, though. It's the fans, like, they want their teams. I mean, Titans fans certainly talk a lot about how the national media doesn't respect them and they get no attention and all that. Right.
They're right.
Right? So, I mean, this,
maybe you guys should go to the games more often. How about that, Titans fans?
Well, that's fair, but this is part of that too. This is the same thing.
I'm so angry saying
that. Yeah, geez. Scolding the Titans fans. Text them, Titans fans. Text them.
615-737-1025. Tisk, tisk.
Are they still rolling in?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Again, all the ones about Stillman, I can't read on the air. Can't read them.
What percentage are about Stillman?
It's gone down since we stopped talking about Stillman.
If
we talk about Stillman some more, we'll get some more texts here about him, but then like his head will get bigger too. So if you miss any of these show, we've moved all of our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. Search Morning Drive in Apple or Spotify or log on to thegamenashville.com to find our daily audio. Rate, review, and subscribe today. Lee Sterling, when we come back, going to make you guys a little money here. Paramount Sports picking games for the weekend. We'll talk to him when we return right here on Morning Drive.
Ryan Seacrest here. So every great barbecue takes a little patience. And while the food does its thing, you can enjoy a little Chumba Casino. The perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.